Hi, I'm Jamie Potts,
a member of the LAS, and you're listening to DNA, Fishing Podcast with Dan Sissons and Adam Kirby. Hope you have a good show. Speak to you soon.
Welcome to episode 10 of the DNA Fishing Podcast with me, Adam Kirby, and my good friend, Dan Sissons.
How you doing, mate?
Yeah, good. Recovered from yesterday?
Yeah, just about. I slept well last night. I don't know about you, but I certainly slept well. That was a long old day, right? Yeah. For those that are unaware or listening to us in the future, we had our first foray into the freshwater game of 2024 yesterday. The LAS, the inaugural LAS Canal Cup in rugby, while we were on the Oxford Canal. And it was a good fun day, mate. I enjoyed it, wasn't it? It was a good fun day.
Yeah, it was good. The weather was kind to us. The Oxford Canal was as clear as a Midlands canal has ever been for me. So that was a bonus. We both caught some stuff. That was also a bonus. It was a good day.
It was a good day, yeah. And Potto, our good friend Jamie Potts there, introing us in. And he came a credible third on the day. I think he did very well.
Yeah, he did really
well. He was effectively a lone ranger on his own. So, he didn't even have the luxury of, like you and I, with another pair of, or another brain to pick along the way, so to speak. But, yeah, he did well. And in actual fact, they all did well. Paul Danby won the event. Yeah, we think we did some miles. There was Will Pender and Josh Fletcher drove all the way up from Cornwall. That must have been a
good effort.
Not a drag, yeah, but that's a top effort. And they caught some fish. I think everyone enjoyed themselves. It was a good fun day, and it was nice to support the first of one of those particular events. And we got plenty of cobwebs to shake off, haven't we, matey? It's
yeah. There was, do you think anyone else stopped and had a cup of tea and a sit down halfway through?
Well, if they didn't, they should have done. But it was plenty of chance there for me to get rid of all the mistakes before next weekend. But we'll come on to that later. But yeah, I enjoyed it. We caught some cool fish. I had a nice perch, 36 on a crank. That was pretty cool. My first ever canal zander as well. So it's even at my ripe old age now, I can still tick some things off the list, which was quite exciting. And all I've thought about in the past sort of 24 hours is how did we avoid all those mini perch that seem to be around? But anyway, that's something for next time. I don't know about you, if there's anything you're kicking yourself with today.
No, I think I've just been analysing what we did. So I guess we're known for throwing tiny stuff and getting a string of little perch, etc. And this time around, we both decided that we were going to predominantly throw hard baits, although we both threw plastics at certain times. Yeah, I was trying to think whether the outcome was better or worse than I expected. I don't know. Yeah, I'm slightly disappointed because it started well. I mean, I think I had a perch on like my third cast with a tiny little suspending minnow hard bait, and I thought, here we go, this is going to be easy, and then it kind of fell apart. But also, I kind of felt, because we needed two pike, I kind of felt that bit worked. Like, we both had pike. I had a pike 60 odd, which was really helpful for score. And probably the reason that I had that is because I was at the time was throwing a crankbait, and that got a reaction. So yeah, maybe I suppose my lasting outcome is, can we compete with hard baits through an entire comp? Probably not, but is there a place to use them at certain points? Yes. I've suffered amazingly badly with my choice of setup, thinking I could use the light rod I was using for hard baits, that I would get away with flinging little tiny plastics for small perch during the the dead part of the day during the middle of the day, and that was horrible. Like, I really hated having to use a 7 gram tubular Tronner. I couldn't even flick a 1 gram jighead to the other side of the canal. So that's a learning. Yeah, I've never done that before. So that was a learning. What about you, mate? What did you end up thinking about your decisions and your choices you made?
It reminded me a lot of particularly when I would fish more canal-based competitions, when if my plan was solely to fish for small perch, as an example, on a length-based match, then that's easy because, as you just said then, you know, you're on a 5 gram rod and, you know, you're choosing your gear accordingly and you're not deviating from that in any way. But on when we did a few competitions in Europe and et cetera, and all of a sudden then we're toying with the idea of, well, we need that rod and we need this rod and we need this gear. And before you know it, I'm kind of weighed down by so much gear that the idea of moving around becomes cumbersome and awkward. So there is a fine line to draw. I mean, I saw some guys angling yesterday and they got their little tripods, haven't they? And they got 2 or 3 rods set up in there and it all looks very organised. Yeah. And maybe that's the deal. Maybe they're just more organised than I am and that's not difficult. But I think essentially, you know, I mean, I got all 3 species. I know you didn't, but you did manage to get the big pike that we were looking for, the bigger pike, certainly. So, man alive, we're out of that game a long time. And as we said in the car on the way yesterday, these things move on quickly, don't they? So we had no business turning up there and troubling the podium spaces. That's the way I'll look at it, you know. I mean, everyone can have a lucky day, I know, but
we did get nice. The prizes, though.
Well, one of us got in the prizes though, and it's to your eternal credit. Yeah, well done. Why don't you tell the boys and girls what your prize was for?
I won the prize for the smallest fish.
Well done.
We haven't lost our touch that much. We're still catching the tennis.
This is it. Yeah. Wasp extraordinaire, Mr. Kirby. Right. I mean, that is.
It wasn't that small. It was 11 centimetres. I mean, that's not even
small.
Yeah,
I know. That's a... You would have killed for an 11 centimetre back on the old canal match days, wouldn't you? Do you know, that was a... Yeah.
I would have killed for 3 more of them yesterday, if I'm honest.
Yeah, I know. So would I. I was so disappointed not to fill my perch card up. I only had 2. That was so disappointing. But without harping on too much about all these things, because ultimately, you know, we didn't do as well as others did. And probably deservedly so as well. But when we pulled up to one spot and you immediately said, oh, there's a fish there topping up or doing whatever. And then I had 2 casts across it with a little mini Megabass crankbait and had a 36 centimetre perch. So if that isn't the DNA way, mate, I don't know what is, because that's teamwork extraordinaire going on right there.
That was one of the highlights. Yeah.
That was pretty boss, man, wasn't it? So that was a and any, you know, I'll take a 35 centimeter plus canal perch any day of the week. You know, that's a proper one. So yeah, I was over the moon with that, and good to see some friendly faces as well. Really thoroughly enjoyed it. Some good dudes up there and dudettes as well up there. So yeah, really pleased with that, and I am. You know it, but some of the boys and girls won't know it at home. I'm tasked with trying to help out the LAS now with some of their saltwater side of things. So that wasn't the sole reason for going yesterday, although it was one of the reasons. You know, wanted to go up and show me face and, you know, go and speak to a few people that I've only spoken to via emails and text messages and stuff over the past couple of months. So it's hopefully I'm looking at trying to sort some events out throughout the year, hopefully a bass competition, definitely some kind of light game stroke species hunter fair. Again, all these things are open to change, but the plan is to bring the LAS, which is the Law Anglers Society, for those that don't know, sort of kicking and screaming up to the 21st century and giving the saltwater side of things the big push it deserves, because No one. I will defend freshwater lure fishing to the hilt. I love it. I love everything about it. I mean, crikey, I'm even fit going pike fishing next weekend. But, you know, I still think that saltwater angling is where the future is in terms of moving lure angling forward. So if we can play, or if I can play, you know, a little tiny piece of that, a little part to have a little part to play in that, then I'll consider that a success. So keep your eyes and ears open for that in the future, because there will be some comps and stuff coming on. And as ever, our devoted listenees will get first heads up on all of these different things and check out the Lure Angling Society pages on Facebook and all that stuff. And you'll be kept up to date on all the latest happenings in and around the country and what everyone's up to. So that was a party political broadcast on behalf of the LAS.
Yeah, well, good on you and good on everyone else that's involved, because, you know, it's voluntary and there's admin with all these things, and without people like you and the others, it would die a slow death. And they've had a bit of a tough time more recently, so nice to see some fresh blood coming in. And yeah, look forward to seeing what happens to the Lure Angling Society later in the year, or the year progresses. Yeah, good.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. I'll certainly be keeping a close eye on that because I'm involved in it. But I'll try and keep everyone up to date. I think that's half the battle with any of these things is you know, we're bombarded on social media, Facebook, you know, Insta and all the rest of it with all kinds of content from all around the world, particularly if you're like us and you're interested in what's going on in the, you know, in the US scene. And I've been checking in. There's a comp today happening as we speak, and I've been checking in on that today, as well as things more local. So it's very easy for LAS staff, and there are other clubs around as well and societies and stuff that are trying to do their bit, for it all to get kind of lost under the weight of whatever else is going on around the world. So it's... yeah, we'll do our bit and we'll try and help some people out along the way. Which leads us nicely on to our questions, man.
Yeah, we've had some questions. You ready for this? Yeah. Actually, one thing before we get on to the new questions, I feel like we left everyone hanging with how do you say IMA or IMA?
Well, yeah. Tell them. This is
yeah.
Good.
Well, we got friends in high places, so we've got Andy Mitten to thank. He had a chat with them directly, and apparently you say it like IMA, which now I say IMA. It leads me way open to whatever you want to append to the end of that. But IMA is how you say it. And I had a little bit of look on the Tinterweb, and basically IMA, IMA, or IMA as I was saying it. It's the first three letters of the word imagination. So there you go.
Yeah. It's glorious, isn't it? Absolutely glorious. Oh. Well, any anything else we want Andy Mitten to help us pronounce, then please send your questions our way. But yeah,
Kitek or Kitek?
And it's K, isn't it? as we've spoken about this before, but as Andy messaged me to say IMA, as in I'm an alien, an English alien, so there's a police. That's a nice little moniker for anyone that forgets that. So remember that, because you'll impress your friends with it. And K-Tech, as in, for those that are old enough to remember K's catalogue. That's how I remember it. I don't know about anyone else, but yeah. I think, thankfully, I'm never going to be in a position where I will need to embarrass myself with my mispronunciation of those different things. Bearing in mind, when we were in Japan, it was just a constant embarrassment of... because I couldn't communicate with those people anyway. So whatever I said was just an embarrassment, you know? So making me look the clown and the fool that I am.
Let's not get onto the Neko rig.
No. Which is why I don't use it, because I can't pronounce it. Yeah. Otherwise, if I could pronounce it, I'd use it more often.
Well, I have to say Neko rig, because otherwise no one knows what I'm on about. But I'm reliably informed it's Neko rig. But there you go.
Yeah, but who informed you of this? Mr. Neko himself?
My Japanese man on the street.
On the scene, yeah. Our Japanese correspondent.
Mm. That's it. Man, yeah, this is dull. Okay. We better get into the questions.
Let me just shuffle my papers here. Here we go. This sounds very newsreader-ish.
Sounds like there's more
than
there is.
This is from our friend Simon, a.k.a. the Bass Blanker. Check him out. You'll find him online and all kinds of different places, actually. I think I saw a post up for him today where he's been bass fishing. First of all, Simon, this is over a month old, this email, and I do apologise for our delay. There is a great lost episode of episode 10, which we had to disregard for legal reasons. Let's put it that way. But so we do apologise for the delay, and we do encourage everyone else to send our questions. So he said some very kind things about the podcast, etc. We appreciate that, man. And he wants to ask us a question about the free rig. So you mentioned in one episode about using the free rig and loving the presentation. Having never heard of this rig, I've done some research. I found a video by the guy who runs Street Fish in London about how to tie it and briefly mentioned some of the benefits. I'm just going to add a put in brackets. It's kind of the easiest rig in the world to tie, so that makes it good for me as well as for everybody else. But it seemed to be primarily for coarse fish. What benefits does the free rig have for sea fishing, and is it viable for shore fishing, mainly for bass, but also pollock, who seem to hit it on the drop too, please? Many thanks, Simon. So cheers, Simon. I will pass that over to my good friend, Mr. Kirby.
Okie dokie. Well, you'll have to remind me if I miss any of the sub questions there. But
oh, well.
Is it just for freshwater? No, most things aren't. So, yeah, more than welcome to transfer that over to saltwater, as we have. When you say free rig in the sea, to me, I predominantly think wrasse fishing, but also that's the rig of choice that we've been using when we've been fishing soft plastics for black bream, and we'll get to that in a future episode of why we use that. But in terms of using it from the shore, I think you would, you know, like with it, like casting from the shore, as in not having deep water at your feet. I mean, if you've got deep water at your feet, yeah, I mean, that's no different from fishing from a boat, right? But if you're casting from the shore, I'd say you probably need a longer rod to try and get the lift action, to try and get the lead up in the water and therefore the slow fall of the lure. So, yeah, why not? I don't automatically think of bass and pollock when I think of the free rig. So in my mind's eye, how the free rig works is, well, okay, yeah, let's go back a few steps. So free rig, for those that don't know, very simple rig. Lure at the end of your leader, lead free running up and down on your leader above the lure and the hook. Typically, unlike a free run in Texas rig, you don't use a cone lead or a ball lead. You use, well, maybe the easiest way to describe the lead, most probably the most common and simple version of that, is effectively like a column drop shot lead, but with an eye on it, not a pinch eye, an actual round eye, so it runs up and down the leader. There are technical stuff, you know, if you follow any of Dan and I's socials, you would have seen us using bean sinkers, which is kind of designed for the job. But basically, they run up and down the line. The way the rig works is cast it out, flick it out, whatever. And because it's free running, and because the lure of choice with a free rig is something with a bit of friction in the water, I think Dan said before, it's almost like that you want a lure that almost acts a bit like a parachute, like it wants to resist falling through the water. So because of those two things, the weight gets to the bottom quickly. And the beauty of the free rig is once the lead's on the bottom, obviously you've got a nice long bit of leader, and that lure will just flutter its way down naturally, like an unweighted, like a natural presentation, but an unweighted lure. So that's the sweet spot. It's basically that natural drop of the lure. it's also a bit different in the terms of when the lead's on the bottom, and you might have, well, depending on how you fish it, you know, you might have a couple of meters, you might have, you know, more. So once you let that lure fall to the bottom, if it doesn't get a take instantly, you can creep the lure back to the lead. Once the lure reaches the lead and you'll obviously feel the resistance of the lead, you could work it along the bottom, you could drag it a little bit, or you could just reset it. So effectively you're using the length of the rod to lift that rig up in the air again as high as possible, and then if you introduce slack to it, it repeats itself. The lead works its way to the bottom, the lure follows weightlessly. So that's kind of the action. Does that make sense to listen to what I said there, Dan, or anything you would add?
100% that makes sense. The weights generally have, where the line passes through, let's call it the eye of the lead, there'll be some kind of, it's almost like a silicon tubing in there, right, to make it as friction free as possible to encourage the lead to be free moving on the line. If you're using it in any kind of flow, then you need to be casting what we would describe as up tide or up the flow. If you're casting down tide, you won't achieve that. You'll lose the free rig aspect of it because you'll get too much of a, I want to say almost bow in the line, but you won't get the bow in the line, and therefore the lead and the lure won't part when you lift your rod tip up and stuff like that. But I say for shore fishing, I've used it for mini stuff, and you know, sort of like going underneath my feet. I mean, we used it to good effect at Mever last year at CLF, didn't we? Just to go and get our RAS done really quickly when we were desperate for a ballon. But of course, at Mever there, we had 15 foot underneath our feet. If you're casting from the shore, you know, even if you're in waders, but you're still fishing in 4 or 5 foot and you're fishing at 40, 50 yards, I'll be honest, I'm not sure how beneficial that would be unless, as Ad said, you're using a proper long rod that's able to cope with that.
It's, I think, a killer method. There's better ways of doing it. Like totally agree. Yeah. Pollock love a lure that's on the drop. Like, we found that. But yeah, many different ways. I think I prefer to do that. I mean, traditionally metal, slow jig specifically. I mean, effectively, that's the tool for the job, as a slow, erratic fall through the through the column. Pollock loved that. Bass too. You could fish. A light-weighted sort of fluke, forktail kind of lure. That would be a lovely way to fish for both of those species through the water column. Or indeed, you know, as long as you don't overweight a jig head, that would still be probably the tactic of choice to fish the water column. Although, I think both those species prefer a soft plastic, paddle tail or otherwise, not to be descending through the water head first, which, of course, if you overweight a jig head, it goes nose down. I mean, one of the ways to cheat that is, after you cast it out, let the lure sink on a tight line. So you get like an arc, but because it has tension to your rod tip, that lure's going to fall not quite horizontal, but more horizontal. That's a decent presentation for that kind of thing. Anything else pollock-wise, Dan? I mean, we'd probably both reach for metal on the boat or whatever.
That's right. If we were tasked with, you know, particularly if we're out on the boat and we're tasked with catching a pollock, then that wouldn't be my go-to to do it. There would be quicker ways, I would suggest. I was racking my brains just then. I'm sure we would have both caught bass and pollock while free rigging, and a host of other species, wouldn't we? I think particularly for those that might be fishing in where there's a decent bit of water flow, or if you're out in the boat, then it is a nice way of, if you've got to counteract the tide or the flow with a heavier weight, you can still use a very small hook. And that was always something we struggled with umpteen years ago when we were trying to, you know, reenact our sort of light game stuff from the shore in the boat, and all of a sudden realizing that, yeah, you can't drop 4 gram, you know, drop shot weights down in a knot and a half of tide. So a free rig does open another world up for that, I have to say. But no, it's such a simple rig, but it is a killer rig on its day. And if you want to check some stuff out, particularly on lure choice for all that kind of stuff, then check out the Hookup Tackle on their YouTube page. Hookup Tackle USA, that is. They've done some great videos on the free rig and the kind of baits that work well for it. And as anyone will watch any of that stuff will know, any of those baits they're using for their, whether they're largemouth or smallmouth bass, will work even better over here for our ball and wrasse fishing. So it's, there's a lot of cool info about on that. And we, funny enough, you know, I think you and I only started calling it a free rig once we started seeing those videos. Before that, we were just using it without really understanding that there was a technical term for it, right? But
it's not a million miles away from a free running Texas rig, as I've said. But
no,
I just think that angles are better. Like, there's something about a cone lead where the entry to the lead is obviously right at the nose. That's not quite as good as a lead that runs freely, where the angle is like up to the rod tip, and then the lure is, it's not 90 degrees, but it's more like 90 degrees. Like, I much prefer it. I much prefer it in my mind's eye. I much prefer it, you know, when I've tried these things in clear water and I see how it works. I just think it's got an extra 20% on free running Texas. Don't write that off.
100%, and it's a kind of rig that you can almost reverse engineer and see how you can imagine how someone was using just a cone weight, and they were sort of enacting a presentation upon a lure, and then, you know, they've persuaded or they've encouraged someone or they've done it themselves, is made a lead that will just run freer. So I hope that helps you out, Simon. It is a killer rig. Do try it out if you get the opportunity for any of that kind of stuff. But if you've got a bit of water underneath your feet, then it's a very nice way to get that free falling movement to a bait that is difficult on a jig head or on any other method, right? So, but yeah, cheers for that, Sol. We appreciate that. And I hope you're catching a few, mate, because I'm pretty sure I saw online today that you have been catching a few bass. So it's good on you. Should we move on to Lee's question?
Let's go.
So this is our friend Lee Russell. He says he's loving the pod and all that, but it makes me feel queasy reading all that stuff out. But thank you, Lee. We appreciate that, matey. As a Japan-obsessed person in general, in life, food and fishing, I loved hearing about your Osaka adventure. And then, as I used to manage at the venue for the big one in Farnborough, taking a keen interest in that too. But having listened to both, I am now really thinking hard about the UK doesn't need to try and catch up with Japan, the USL, France, etc. But instead, our industry needs to think about the fish and fishing we have available to us here and develop products such as rod and lures to suit what we are doing. So here was the question at the end of the ramble. What can we as anglers do to drive the change? Obviously, we can buy from the little guys, like Tom at FFS or Cal from CAN, but there's a gap to think bigger, surely. If we can't ever get, every colour of what we need from Japan because they are buying it, perhaps we need to switch focus to drive that development here at home. And as we said before, when that question came in, we could probably do two episodes just on that question alone. But we've had some time to ponder this one, mate. You're more plugged into the market, I would describe, than I am in terms of the mechanics of the UK lure scene. So how do you feel about that? Because obviously, Sam, we don't need to catch up with Japan or USA or Europe generally, but how do we kind of forge our own path as the UK here?
Yeah, it's tricky. I think probably I'm going to answer this question maybe differently than the first time on the last episode.
Sorry, Lee. We're going to answer a different question.
Well, I think you can break it up into different parts. So like, what I'm hearing is, you know, creating equipment, I suppose, that suits our fishing. Well, I think, you know, the first thing the first thing that grabs me there, and I might be, you know, there might be some blind spot and I'm not thinking about it clearly, but I mean, when you say that, I think really the only lure fishing that we do extensively in the UK has gone its own path compared to, say, Europe, our closest counterpart with lots of the same species, would be our dear LRF, right? And the species hunting. So,
yeah,
I'm trying to think. Can you think? I mean, I can't, you know, like whether, you know, so bass fishing, I'm going to say sea bass because we're talking about globally here, and, you know, some countries have got sea bass and also freshwater bass, largemouth, etc., black bass. So yeah, I mean, when I'm thinking about bass fishing in the UK, we certainly don't have that exclusively. And I think it's fair to say, whether that's boat or shore, pains me to say it, but France is way ahead of us, and way ahead of most, in fact, in terms of what it's, the bass fishing that it's doing in both the boat and from shore. You know, they have all the geography, you know, whether if you compare Brittany with Cornwall, very close. You know, there's nothing really, in a UK perspective, we'd be a bit daft not to look over the fence and see what they're already doing, like whether we decide to buy what they use or use that to fuel our own developments, then so be it. So yeah, I mean, this is exploding already, like which path to go. Like, so if we're talking about, if I'm saying, well, really the only thing that I think's different to a degree is the way that, you know, the gravity that species hunting with LRF has got in the UK. I don't see that in other countries. Yes, a form of it exists in Japan, but not the same as here. And yeah, no one's gonna like me for saying it. It's in Japan, it wouldn't be classed as lure fishing, but it is big. It's big with families, youngsters, just people like us that want to have a bit of fun using a somei, make it simple, easy. That does exist, but I suppose what I'm saying is, in Japan, are they as enthusiastic as the Brits seem to be about LRF species hunting? No. Like, there wouldn't be a Japanese angler using a 400-500-pound rod to go LRF species hunting. I can state that. That doesn't exist. So, yeah, you know, like, you know, I've had this conversation with George. Like, sometimes George, this is George at HTO, in terms of developing stuff for the UK market, like, we've tried lots of stuff. So lures is a really interesting one because, you know, if you just lived on Facebook, you would understand that there's a hefty part, or you would believe that there's a hefty part of the population that thinks that, you know, copying a lure or coming out with something that isn't unique is kind of worthless. Well, you know, the reality is, and I've seen this, is, you know, we've gone to the effort of designing lures, you know, like getting the molds created, sending that to a factory on the other side of the world. Tons of prototypes to and fro until you've got these, you know, these lures that you've designed sorted, and then you release them on the shelves and no one buys it. Whereas,
yeah,
you know, the reality is, stick a lure on a shelf that looks a lot like a lure that someone already likes but maybe costs five times as much, sells out instantly. So you know, it's one of those occasions of what people say doesn't necessarily align, unfortunately, with with what you see on the sales side of things. And you know, I can excuse that. Maybe when HTO last, I mean, there's actually, I was at a trade show earlier in the week, and you know, there's, off the top of my head, there's at least two lures there that we've designed, our own design, and I'm really looking forward to seeing if they get traction or not. But I'm thinking about the last time we, trying to link up the two parts of the story, the last time we did our own LRF lures, they ended up in the bargain bins eventually, and it wasn't because there was anything second rate about those lures. Some of those lures are still favourites of mine now. I think people just either wanted confidence of seeing something that they understood, that they'd seen before, or the confidence of it being a Japanese brand, etc. So that's one of the challenges. Well, where to go from here? I do think I hear what you're saying, and I don't want to argue with it because I feel like I'd be arguing with myself. Like, that's what I want to see. I want to see the UK scene leading the way. But the reality is, I believe that we're not in the lead. We're playing catch up, and you know, the biggest advantage when you're playing catch up is you don't need to mess around with the winding path that other nations have been on to get where they are today. You could just jump straight to the future. You don't have to worry about all the stuff that didn't make it. So in some respects, I think we're quite lucky that we can, as I say, you know, stick our nose over the fence, look at what's working, just go for that. But yeah, one day I would absolutely love to see the UK sort of forming its own paths and coming up with stuff. And I think at this point, we should probably honour the fact that there are quite a few garage-style one-man-band businesses that do this in the UK, and they knock out some seriously cool stuff. But I guess I've perceived the question as being maybe a bit more mainstream. What do you think? Sorry, that was a bit of a rant, Dan.
No, not at all. I think that's all good stuff, mate. Funny enough, I've received some stuff in the post yesterday from one of our UK one man band kind of affairs who's trying to forge a bit of a path that I'm going to try and do something with, hopefully within the next month, 6 weeks or so. We're a tiny part of a global market, aren't we? And
yes,
we can't flex any muscles in that. But what I do think is interesting is the following, is that, for example, as you were telling me, Ad, the other week, that Ultimate Fishing are trying to get a bit more of a push into the UK market at the moment. So,
You see it on Facebook. Yeah, you can't avoid it.
Yes. So whilst that doesn't mean that, you know, they're bringing out products specifically for the UK, they are appreciating us as a market, i.e. there's some money there to be made, right? Because ultimately that's what it comes down to, is they want to make some money out of us. What sells and what doesn't sell will then influence what they choose to bring in next year, the year after, and so on and so forth. So if there is a fashion or a trend in the UK, then that will start to reveal itself. I think you've got good people doing good stuff. You got Ben at Art of Fishing, who's been kind of trying his best to lead the way in bringing product in from Europe and Japan to suit UK anglers. I think the biggest problem that we've had, or maybe I've had, is that for years we've been buying stuff that looks good without really understanding what its primary job was. Now, ultimately,
yeah,
it doesn't matter.
So
What a lure's primary job is, if I'm using it for something else and it's working well for me, that's fine. But to a large degree, it's a bit like that old adage that, you know, if you teach yourself to play the guitar wrong, or better analogy, actually, if you teach yourself to fly cast wrong, which I did once, it's very difficult to bring it back again. And then, of course, I might use something incorrectly or wrong, and then the next thing you know, I'm showing you, and then you're using it wrong, and then someone else is using it wrong, and all that, and we're not really getting the most out of it. So we're a small part of a big market. I think rather than fight against that or rally against that, we should just embrace that for what it is and just accept the fact that we can cherry pick stuff from all over the globe and go, that suits us, that doesn't. We haven't really got a USP in this country, have we? So we haven't got anything, as you just said, that's unique, apart from the surge in uptake in what LRF has now become. What I want to see, you know, it's a bit of a bugbear of mine, but I want to see is, you know, some of these guys that are very successfully fishing with flavoured baits and stuff like that to kind of take the next step and move on to trying to catch those same species, but without the flavoured stuff involved in it. I know some people won't be overly pleased with me saying that, but that is ultimately what is going to make someone the better angler. So in terms of presentation and thinking more so about actually how do I trick this rather than tricking his nose, I'm tricking his eyes. Yeah, man. I'm going to blow smoke up your posterior, but, you know, yourself, George, Jake, Lee, there's tons of other guys involved with HTO and the, you know, the Tronics family that have been putting tons of effort into, you know, working out what guys, anglers want, you know, what we're going to part our money with. But ultimately we decide. And if you look in any tackle shop that doesn't specialise in lure fishing and stuff, which let's be honest, is most of them, that we will have a smattering of lures on the wall. And then, you know, the lure snob in us will walk up and go, well, I'm not buying any of that stuff. But the reason it's on the wall is because that's what sells. And you will see a plethora of black minnows. You'll see a plethora of black minnow copies. You'll see a plethora of pachinko copies. You'll see, you know, all kinds of metals and jigs and stuff, because that's what catches. So, you know, well, I haven't used a black minnow.
But it's not just what catches. It's what catches because that's everything. That's all that people are using, right? Like your analogy you've already used. Yeah, it's a challenge. Like it's funny, you just jogged my memory from another example of this that I got this week at the Tronics trade show. I heard this secondhand, and actually it's been troubling me slightly. So maybe I'll spare the details because it's not really fair on the business concerned. I more want to make this about me and HTO and how it works. So HTO, me playing my part as well, we came out with a specific rod for a specific technique, which, well, I might as well say what it is. It's called micro jigging, but it's not that micro because it's a boat technique. It's like metal jigging rod up to about 40 gram, boat fishing rod. Like that technique in the UK with our inshore fishing is about the most fun, the most successful fisher chuck method I think there is. I mean, it just wins on all levels. But the reality is, apart from a few people, myself included, there's not many people doing it. And George and I and a few members of the team went out a couple of seasons ago, and we basically, you know, there's blog posts about it online. We had a day doing micro jigging, and we all had a fantastic time. And that includes people like myself that do this kind of thing, do light lure all the time from the boat, all the way through to guys on the boat that really would label themselves as being bait fishermen. You know, they wanted it on the act because we were catching like 10 fish to every one on bait. It was that successful and a lot more fun because the gear was light. So kind of off the back of that, like, we knew we had something. I mean, we didn't invent the thing, right? But we knew we had something because there we were fishing in the UK on the south coast and we were having the best time. So off the back of that, it didn't really take too much enthusiasm from anyone really to go, yeah, we should run these rods. specifically for this, because why wouldn't people want to be involved? Now, those rods came out at least a season ago, possibly a season and a half ago. And fast forward to this week, I heard that one of my favourite retailers that will remain nameless on the podcast had trusted us, and I say us in the terms of both HTO and people like myself that support these things, and had put an order in for 10 of these rods. And I'm afraid to say, here we are a year later, all 10 of those rods are still on the shelf. Now, the reason this has been troubling me is because I hold my hands up. In fact, I've been toying with the idea all weekend of sending the guy a message to kind of say, sorry, look, I'm going to see what I can do about it. Because the reality is those rods will not shift unless we support that, guide people through, we do the education piece. And like I say, we've already done like blog posts, etc. They're all out there, but that's not how it works. Like, you have to hold, I'm just going to say people, you have to hold people's hands through this process. And it takes a really, really long time. I mean, Dan, your experience as well as mine, probably really the only thing that we've seen this from sort of almost start to finish to where it is today is the LRF. It took a very, very long time. It took a huge amount of individuals to kind of be the disciples for it. It was like a huge relay race where, you know, one person would get knackered with their efforts and would hand it over to, and that's still happening today. Like, these things take so long to get enough momentum in them that they actually, you know, they're there, you know, they're done. And yeah, it's that size of effort. I mean, traditionally we'd be talking about marketing budgets, but you know, this is fishing in the UK. Like, it's not carp fishing, there's not multi-million pound budgets. This is people like Dan and myself that are just being vocal because we find something fun and we think that other people might be interested in it. But it's hard work, man. It's hard work.
It is hard work. I, as you did as well, but I kind of grew up in the boat fishing family. And it's, if someone was going out for a day's bait fishing, let's say they were going, place fishing, right? They would probably take two rods, and those rods would cover everything from drift fishing to fishing on the bottom to dragging a spoon around. They could put a 1 ounce lead on it, they could put an 8 ounce lead on it, and the rod choice was really the least of their concerns. They were more concerned with, have I got enough fuel on the boat, is the boat going to work, have I got this, have I got that, have I got a flask, have I got, you know, all these different things, because the fishing was so good that you didn't need to be dialed in on specifics on a specific rod choice to be able to winkle out the fish. Now, that what LRF and Light Game has done to us over the years is shown us that there is a huge difference between rods, particularly at the lightest level. So, you know, whilst you can catch anything essentially with anything, if you're trying to be specific on something, then there's a, you know, you have to really think about your choices, your rod choices and all these different things. And when you and I are fishing, particularly, you know, a comp on Grafham or Rutland or whatever, you know, at the start of the day we're trying to cull rods from the van, thinking, well, we can't take eight rods each for eight different methods, we need to be a bit more specific on this, right? We need to think about what we're doing. And there is in the boat fishing fraternity, you know, these, unless someone's going out on a big 30-foot boat and they've got all the room in the world, but most guys that are going out in their 16, 17, 18-foot boats, they don't want to take 1,000 rods out with them. So I do have some sympathy with those people because they may want to do all this stuff. Excuse me, there's a bit of windy pops there. They may want to do all this stuff, but, you know, they might get one day a fortnight, one day a month that they'd be able to get the boat out. And, you know, they don't necessarily want to do, you know, 2 hours on small metals, and then we're going to go and drift a bank with some 6-inch paddle towels, and then I'm going to stick the pick in and put some baits out for 3 hours. They can't do all things at once. You and I are the odd ones out, and it's not the other way around. So,
yeah,
as you said, I would implore anyone to go out for a day with small metals, and you won't look back. You know, as soon as you get involved in that, and you'll come back having caught, you know, 4, 5, 6, 8 different species, and you'll think, why haven't I been doing this for the last 10 years? So I don't want to degrade what the good work that, you know, I big up to George and yourself and anyone who's involved trying to bring in these kind of niche products and stuff like that. But I'll give you an example is that, you know, as you're talking about that light boat jigging rod there as a primary example, I'm sure you would have mentioned it to me before, but I didn't know that was available for sale or coming up available for sale. And that's, you know, I would walk into my tackle shop tomorrow and go and hand over some pound notes for one of those rods, you know. So it's about, you know, we've got to look for it as consumers. Retailers have got to do their bit. So if they're going to order in 6, 8, 10 of these rods, well, then they've got to make sure people know what that's about. And they got to then be able to plug people in to anglers such as yourself that can then assist them with that about, you know, I bought this rod, what reel do I use? What braid should I try? You know, how long should my leader be? And all these different things. So I think it's more of a collective. I'm reversing back here, almost something like what the LAS can offer, which is, you know, we can help people along the way with these sort of specific techniques and things like that to be able to help people get the most out of it. Everyone benefits. The angler benefits, the retailer benefits, the wholesalers benefit. Everyone benefits. Everyone wins out of it. But we've all got to do our bit, really. And it's tough when, you know, you might be going out and catching bass on some killer method, but you don't want to, you know, give that specific lure away or whatever. Do you know what I mean? You know, because we, as much as we want to try and be open and transparent about what we're doing, you've got to keep a little bit back sometimes, because if you don't, before you know it, you've lost it to someone else. So it's an interesting question, one that I'm pretty sure, Lee, you would have known this. You might be a little bit impish there. There isn't an answer to that one necessarily. But like I say, we could do 2 hours on that alone. I mean, that's the kind of thing you could get George involved in that. You could get a retailer involved in this and all sit around a table over something cold and fizzy and talk about that through to the wee small hours, couldn't you? I think.
Yeah. I mean, the pachinko, very common bass lure in the UK. I mean, that's a classic example. There's probably 10 brands in the UK right now that have got something that looks pachinko, including the original from Ultimate. And the more people see it in the shop, and the more anglers that use it, and the more anglers that catch on it, it just gets more and more and more gravity. And it's even less likely that something different will get bought and start to be caught on. So I think it's education. Like, until, I mean, we know, you know, we're not being elitist. Like, we know hundreds of anglers that are, like, thinkers, and, you know, like, it's not enough for them anymore in their journey to just follow. They're looking for the next thing. They're thinking about what to use. But unfortunately, a few hundred anglers it's not particularly exciting for big tackle manufacturers, hence some of that is serviced by one-man bands, etc., that we've already said. That's the problem. Like, I think we said it in a previous episode, we're waiting for lure angling to just step up in understanding, and that only happens with time. You know, that's nothing to do with ability, that's just time. And yeah, maybe in the future, when more people start to sort of deviate away from the obvious middle line, it might get broader and it might get a whole lot more exciting. than currently three Basslers.
Well, catching the majority. I don't want to affect your blood pressure on a Sunday evening, particularly after you've had a long weekend and precious little sleep. But if I was to say to you that the pachinko may be Japan's greatest export, your answer to that would be?
Yeah, not Japanese.
Okay. That's there you go. That
also, if you want to, if we're doing a pow pow, double punch, second punch, not the most popular Basslor in France either.
No.
So you have to ask why we got there. Or really, that's not as interesting as where do we go next? But we do need to go to somewhere next.
There's a lot of conundrums that surround the pachinko, and I know you have. We've used them over the years, and they are they're good bits of plastic.
Yeah.
But I will retort that by saying there aren't many, as in there are none, line shy bass. Put it that way. So, you know, if you're casting a lure at a bass, it's unlikely that it's seen a lure before. So we're not dealing with captive fish in captive waters that are under severe pressure. Doesn't work that way. This isn't, a slight on our friend, the pachinko, because, it's a top lure, it works and it catches fish. Same as a black minnow does. The same as this summer, it seems the megabass spindle worm will account for a ton of fish. The pearl white Kitech Easy Shiners will account for a ton of fish this summer, and throughout the year. I think those that are kind of ploughing their own furrow will know that it's not about you're not casting a line shy fish here. You're not casting a fish that has seen a bait before. Or if it's a one in a million shot, if you are, what you're trying to do is arouse the interest of that fish, whether you're sight casting or blind casting, and you're going to do it in the best way possible. And if I was fresh into bass fishing and I went on to Bass Fishing Hampshire or whatever on Facebook or whatever, one of these generic pages, and I would look in there and go, oh yeah, I need a pachinko, I need a couple of size of the black minnows, and it looks like everyone's catching on spindle worms, and that would be it. I'd buy those three lures and I'd probably go out this summer and I'd catch some bass. So it doesn't really matter. Do you know what I mean? Ultimately, what we say, what people should be using, doesn't matter.
It only matters in terms of the question that's been asked. Yeah.
Absolutely. Exactly. Yeah, within the context of the question. So, I was a kid, used to be able to go down the pier and catch a mackerel on a sliver of Coke can that you could cut off and put on a bear hook, get your mackerel, and then you've got your bait, and then you'd be able to fish throughout the day, And that doesn't mean that everyone's going out and, that everyone would do that. But the point being is that, it's just enjoy yourself and have fun without worrying too much about that stuff. But within the context of the question, yeah, it's certainly a head scratcher, that one. And we're not deep thinking enough to be able to answer that. Or we'll certainly definitively answer that. But I'll tell you what it does do, man, is, and cheers Lee for that, by the way, and any other questions, dnafishingpod@gmail.com, because it gives us something to talk about and we're very grateful for it. Tell us about your little visit to the trade show then, for some HTO new product coming out. I don't know what, confidentiality agreement? So are you under pain of death if you reveal anything? I mean, so let's do it, man. Drop it.
No, all good. So the trade events are just that, the trade retailers can come and visit George, look at Tronics and HTO products that are, near coming out. So, we're not talking about prototypes. We're talking about stuff that's ready for market. I really, really enjoyed it. I think I said before, I think we had an episode where we were having a love-in about George. But, yeah, I'm just glad to help on that kind of thing. But equally, you say, oh, yeah, I'll pop along, whatever, and you don't really know what you're signing up for. And, I think I'd been there 5 minutes and one of the reps pulled me aside and kind of said, would you mind helping this retailer with Rod Choice? Yeah, it's a bit daunting to start with. You know, you just walked in the door, you not finished your first cup of tea. But yeah, I really loved it. I mean, yeah, got better through the day. We're kind of, you know, that's not my job. I'm not in the industry. I'm not here to sell people stuff. But it worked beautifully that I wasn't there to sell them stuff. I was just there to like recommend, you know, what I see, like, yeah, maybe a few tips on how to use stuff, like what's the most popular, what kind of people will you sell this to? You know, like what does the newcomer want? What does the top end, you know, what's the top end bougie stuff? Yeah, I really, really, really enjoyed it. Yeah, regrettably, it says more about me than anything, I think. But in modern life, yeah, I probably don't get to help as many people as we all wish we could, because it gives you a nice feeling. Mm. But yeah, it was good. Awesome set of rods coming this year. Don't want to turn this into a sales pitch, but the OG Rockfish rods, the rods that started LRF UK, to link back to Lee's question, you know, that was a UK rod. Like we led Europe in that. I don't know what iteration we're on. Are we iteration 3 or 4 or 5? I don't know. New Rockfish rods out. They look lovely. Still under 40 quid, I think, which is great. Top ends new. So there's a range called Tempest, which sits above Nebula. 14 rod range, covering everything from like tiny, tiny species hunting with a solid tip up to, you know, a rod that can drop 90 grams on offshore banks for bass. And then this was my biggest surprise. And then probably the best rod, in inverted commas, that I saw from HTO at the show was actually the entry-level bass rods that are called Hooligan. It's not a new brand. You will have seen Hooligan models before. Forget everything you've ever remember about Hooligan rods, picking them up in the shop and waggling them. The new ones defy their price point. They're 50 quid. I can't honestly believe what they feel like. Like they're not tip heavy. You give them a waggle and they don't do the figure of eight like parabolic wobble on you. They're fast. It's amazing. There's no, I mean, yeah. I mean, maybe this is a good sort of unplanned way of answering Lee's question. Is that, you know, stuff is moving along nicely, and you know, the more people that get to touch these things in the shop, give them a waggle, have a look. Yeah, you would hope more people are going to get into it. Yeah, it was really, really good.
It's good, man. Yeah, it's good. And you know, you were super enthusiastic yesterday telling me about that, the Hooligan range there. And
yeah, it's mad.
I'll be honest. I don't let the fact that your local tackle shop that you walk into may have the budget range of rods in, and then presume that that's what HTO stands for. It's quite the opposite in many ways. They have got, and they continue to do, you know, and again, this isn't, I've got no affiliation with HTO at all, apart from sharing a pint with George occasionally. So yeah, there's no affiliation from me whatsoever, but they have got the top end gear. There's no question about that. So there's always something cool to order, you know, some funk from the far corners of the world that, you know, between you and your fishing mates is going to be unique, and they're going to fawn over it on the bank. You know, there's nothing wrong with doing any of that stuff. But, you know, in terms of being able to walk into, let's take Prime Angling as an example, because they're probably likely to be the ones that are going to have a nice broad range on the shelf that people could walk into and have a feel of these things, that, you know, before you're about to drop 150, 250, 300 quid on a Japanese blank or something, you know, from Europe, you know, take a look at some of this stuff. And because, as Ad suggested there, that you may not be surprised if you're aware of the quality already, but, you know, George and the team, they're doing it. They're trying to give us what we need collectively, what we all need. So, you know, it's really exciting to see some of that stuff. And I think I might have a little trip down to Prime in the next month or two and just go and see what they got on the shelf down there. And I've been meaning to go down there anyway and speak to the boys because we were going to do some pod stuff down there. But I might use that as an excuse, I think, go down there and have a waggle and see if they want to relieve me of some of my pocket money. So,
on that subject, that was a thought I had that I hadn't really thought about before. But it was really interesting for me to be in front of the retailers because obviously it gives me a perspective that I, you know, other than chatting to my friends that are in the industry, it's a new perspective, just that. And one of the thoughts that I had was, that's one of the problems with pro staff, actually, if I'm being entirely honest, is that, you know, like, you don't, well, I think most of the people I know anyway, don't sign up to a pro staff agreement and expect to be using the budget end of a manufacturer's tackle for all their fishing. So actually there's a bit of a mismatch, like, you know, because a retailer asks you about the budget range of equipment, and you know the honest answer is, well, you know, I use, you know, in my case, I use NEBS all year, you know, and it's like, it's nice to hear it from the retailer to state the obvious that 95% of the stuff that they sell is at the lower end. So, you know, while I'm highlighting a problem though, it's just to highlight that's the benefit of someone like George. I'm not going to say it's like a Formula One team, but the principle applies, is that the high-end technology does start to filter down the range. So while I couldn't say to the retailer, yeah, I've been using the new Hooligan bass rods for the last 12 months, I could say, you know, this feels exactly like the action on a rod that's six times the price that I was using sort of 3 years ago. So, yeah, it was really, really interesting. I think I've come away, like, I knew it anyway. I know I'm stating the obvious, but I came away from the event with just more focus of what the market is and how that differs to, like, our, you and me, perspective, because, you know, because we want to use the latest and greatest and we're happy to fly to the other end of the world to see all that stuff. And, of course, we are the minority, the super minority, you know, we are 1% in doing that. And there's many, many more people that just want to go out fishing and just want to be comfortable with the gear that they've got. So, yeah, I loved it. I loved all of it. It was a real good learning exercise.
Yeah, it must feel a little bit like peeking behind the curtain a little bit, right? So you're seeing kind of the... You've gone through the looking glass. You're seeing what goes on behind the scenes in terms of, you know, and I know you know this with particularly with HTO, but you know about the hard work and the effort that goes on behind the scenes before, you know, they're not just picking 10 blanks out of some random generic catalogue and then sticking a badge on it. You know, they put a lot of thought into what anglers will need and want to, you know. Ultimately, they're trying to persuade us to part of our money. You know, they've got bills to pay. So what's interesting is, you know, in my geekism about looking into the US scene, you know, I'll invent an angler here because I don't want to, you know, libel myself. I'm not sure you can libel yourself from someone in a different country, but just in case, if there was Zach Fireblade and he's, you know, a US pro angler and he's launched his Zach Fireblade signature series of rods, and they'll be quick to mention that they run from $100 up to $500, because that way people can go in and buy the $100 model. And if they asked him honestly and said, well, what are you using? And he'll say, well, I'm using my signature series rods. You know, they'll all be badge signature series, but they'll make a range that runs from $100 to $500 to suit everyone's price point, rather than having the elite end that no one is ever going to part with their money for. And then when they see the guy fishing on the telly, they go, well, no wonder I'm not good as him, because I'm not using $600 or $500 rods. You know, so there's a clever bit of marketing goes on there to ensure that people feel that they can access the equipment that their heroes, in some cases, are using. We're different in this country, of course, because we're nowhere near that level in terms of competition. And, you know, I'm sure you could speak to the great and the good, and you could ask them particularly about what rods they're using, and they won't always be the, you know, the very elite of what's in a particular range or whatever. And you know, I know from yourself, if someone was to ask you about, you know, what did you use on that particular comp, and that, you would, you know, you would gratefully tell them if it was, whether it was a 50 quid rod or a 500 quid rod sort of thing, you know. There's no problem there, you know, there's no secrets in that side of things. But yeah, it's I'm looking forward to seeing what's dropping from those guys. There's always something interesting there along the way. There's not many years gone by that the good people at HTO haven't persuaded me to part with some money of some kind, you know, throughout the year. Do you know what I mean? Well, I parted with some money from you yesterday for some stuff. Do you know what I mean? But, you know, it just goes to show you that, you know, these people are, they're doing their best for us. They're trying to give us some good shtick, right? Do you know what I mean? So yeah, keep your eyes open, everyone, for that. Look online and you know, get into your local tackle shop. And if you want them to grab in a couple of models or so and so, then don't be shy in telling them. Do you know what I mean? So look, can you get one in and let me have a look at? You know, that's if they want to sell you some stuff, then that's the game they're in, right? Do you know what I mean? You know, if I'm trying to sell someone, you know, very particular products through work, then, you know, You've either got to sell that product or whatever. But ultimately, I'm not going to talk them out of something if they're, you know, if they want to part with some money. You know, we got bills and mortgages to pay, so you know they shouldn't be talking you out of it. It's just a case of whether they want to put the effort in the first place. So, and certainly, you know, the guys down at Prime will be able to assist you with that if you're local enough that you'd be able to pop in, because they've got kind of a direct link into the epicenter there, if you like. So, oh well, that was pretty cool, man. Anyway, so it feels like things are starting to happen, mate. The weather's good. We've been fishing. You've been to a trade show. It's all good, man. We finally dropped a pod after being a few weeks away, so it feels like stuff's trying to happen quick. What have you got planned, man? I know you're trying to get the boat set up and ready. I'm trying to get my boat up and set up ready when time allows.
I'm finally back to watching forecasts, so
good.
First time out on the boat after a few months. As you know, kind of prefer to have a nice calm day should anything unexpected happen. So waiting for that day. And then we're off. Oh, and I can't wait. It feels late, but I'm not sure it is late. Like, you know, you follow Facebook, there's a few nice fish coming out. But how many are coming out? You know, some anglers are falling on fish. I'm sure there's plenty of anglers that are going out and having really hard days this early. But we're close, so we need to be ready. The next week or two is going to kick. Yeah.
Well, I, as you know, this takes us all the way back to the beginning and ties the pod up in a nice neat bundle. Next weekend I'll be on with Potto up Pittsford at the Pike Maniacs event. Last year Potto kindly asked, well, I'll tell you what, he didn't ask me, I offered. He had someone drop out, and I'm guessing about 20 other people dropped out, because Wyol was a preferred partner for a Pike comp, Lord only knows.
It's ironic.
But I really enjoyed it last year on with Potto, and it's an event that's not the easiest to get onto. They sell out quickly on that one. So I was kind of privilege really to get on there when I know that there are far better pike anglers than me that would have loved to have been on there. But I went on there with Jamie last year, and we had a ball, we caught some fish. We didn't bother the leaders table, but we did okay. You know, we kept up with most people on that water. There are some monster fish in there, by the way, some absolute monsters in there, as well as plenty of fish, you know, in the double figure bracket, 10, 12, 15, 20 pound fish. Even a pike denier like me managed to catch a few last year on some different methods and stuff like that, which was pretty cool. I was enjoying me crankbait fishing and stuff. That was pretty smart. Until I can convert you into the pike angler that you're destined to become, I'm looking forward to spending a weekend with Jamie next weekend. It should be good fun. And those boys that run those events, they put on a good show. I can't recommend them highly enough. And that's not to downplay any of the UK events that we fish. You know, they're all great and we always enjoy our time there. But in particular, those guys running that event, they put some thought and effort into, you know, looking after the customer, as it were. And they really go above and beyond in terms of that kind of thing. The cake and bread assortment is quite spectacular. They feed you up well. And even better, at this time of year, the pike fishing, at least for half a day, at least until, you know, all those pike have seen a lure, because they can get a bit sulky on there. The pike fishing's pretty good as well. So let me get that out of my system, matey, and then we're and then we'll look forward to getting a bit of salt in our guides and a bit of sun on our noses out in the salty stuff, mate. Ready for the year to come. So anything else to add to wrap us up in a nice little bow, matey?
No, all good, mate, other than to wish you luck for next weekend.
Cheers, geese. Well, I'll whenever we're back, maybe in a couple of weeks' time, I'll fill everyone in on how we went on. I'll remind everyone, dnafishingpod@gmail.com. And because, you know, this is the way the wicked world works now, you know, subscribe, like, follow, send us letters, all that kind of stuff, right? We appreciate all of it, but apparently we're... that's how podcasts work. We need that kind of stuff. If only just to get us out there a bit. We're not going to take over the world, I know. But, you know, it's always nice to look at the numbers coming in and they creep up slowly. And it's, I don't know, it's the ego boost that we needed. And that's, after all, as we said in pod one, I think it was, we're only here to massage our own ego. So when you all help us with that, we're always very appreciative. So anyway, that'll do for me. Tight lines, everyone. I hope you're starting to get out and enjoy the weather very soon. And we'll be back with you just as soon as we got something to tell you.
Yeah, cheers, enjoy geese. The spring.
Take care, guys.